You're listening to Decoding the Code, the podcast for developers. Together with fantastic guest speakers, we explore coding myths, discover helpful tips for beginners and experts alike, and get a peek behind the digital curtains. Get ready for your host, Mark Backus.
Hello and welcome everyone to Decoding the Code. Today we are going to talk from switching from agency to startup. And as a guest speaker, we have Tim Bennix. He is a developer advocate at Uniform. He will tell us more about that later. And he is ambassador for Nuxt.js. Hello, Tim. How are you doing?
Hey, how are you? Thank you for inviting me on your awesome show. I feel You're privileged welcome. That I'm here. Awesome.
I'm happy. I'm happy you could make it. Sure. We worked together before once in last year, I think October, where we both interviewed Avenue, which was it was an amazing experience.
Yeah, that was cool, right? Like at the like behind the scenes, we're like, who takes this question and who does that one? Yeah. And then we figured it out. But it felt like a conversation. So I think we did pretty well.
I loved it. I loved it. Yeah. And so I'm glad we can do something together again. And this topic, I worked at, or I was at least in the startup world before. Mm-hmm. And now I do freelancing, but I know a little bit about it. And so I'm excited about this interview.
Yeah, let's see.
All right. So let's first define what we mean with startup. I have a definition that works well for me. It's the one from Eric Rice. Okay. How was it exactly? It's a human institution that's faced with extreme uncertainty, something like that. I looked it up, how the exact thing. I don't have it in front of me now. But what is your definition of a startup?
Wow, that's a really good story because good question, because my whole life I've been at agencies, right? Ad agencies or technical consulting, things like that. Yeah. And now I'm on the other side, right? I'm on the product end of things, but it's a small company. So I don't actually know anymore what you define as a startup, because are startups always small? Are they just starting? I don't know. Is a startup company that has to be bootstrapped, or does it have to be funded? I actually don't know exactly. And I think for me, the fact that you're making a product that's new and exciting and you have to kind of evangelize the product and let people hopefully use it and find the same usefulness as you find it, that to me is a startup, right? Putting something new a space that didn't exist yet and just try to get there and hopefully get funding. That's kind of what I think.
Yeah, it aligns a little bit with mine, because you say making a new product, and mine is like with extreme level of uncertainty, which is a little bit the same thing, because when you do something new, you have no reference of what to compare yourself with, of where to get tips from. It's all new, and you are, it's always an uphill battle as a startup, because you're facing a ton of stones in your way. But
especially where I work, we're kind of creating this new thing. It's opening a new space, new avenues for companies to work with our tech. And I haven't said yet what we're doing, but that actually is a very interesting thing, because all those big companies, those brands we love to work for, at agencies, but now also at this startup, they all have their contracts already in place. Things are kind of working. Yeah. And then we come along with this startup idea. We're small, but actually it's going to be way better for them if they choose us, right? But how do you convince CTOs of large companies to just switch contracts and go with this tiny company of like 35 people into this completely new world? You can market the shit out of this, but it doesn't mean it works, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. So so tell us, what is the company doing you're working for?
Well, there's a couple of stories that we do. And I'll start with the one that's currently most active and it fits most. And that is, we do personalization. But it's kind of a new way, because personalization in a traditional sense has always been in the CMS, right? So you have like those, hey, I'm a persona because I like this and this and this. So there's kind of an algorithm of if else, and then you show something. But it's all on the origin of the CMS. So the front end needs to ask the CMS, hey, what is this person and what do we need to do with them to make something personalized? And that's like really slow. It's really hard to do. And so where I work at Uniform, we created this whole new paradigm of how you can do API first personalization that's decoupled and it's completely in your code base. So on hydration time, it works. So that's one part. And then we all do everything on the edge of this of the CDN. So it's super fast. Mm. But we also do other things, because how the company started is we have a lot of people that used to work at a company called Sitecore. And Sitecore is this huge behemoth of a CMS. Like they have all these crazy, amazing big clients and they're serving them well. But as it turns out, it's a suite, right? So it's origin based. And it's fine. But if you want to go into the modern times, it gets a little slow. You want to do a headless front end. It's pretty challenging to do with their system. You can do it, but it's not fully how you and me would do it, right? And so now we have a product that basically Jamstackifies their websites. Nice. So we have a custom builder in that you put in front, and then it takes all the web pages, makes it into a Nuxt or a Next page, and just puts it on Netlify. And so that's yet another avenue. We are not really doing that much with it anymore, but definitely a big part of the client base. Now it has Sitecore in the back end. We removed all the servers from Azure and reducing a lot of costs. And then the websites are served 10 times faster on Netlify. Nice. So that's the other side. And the future is very bright, but we have NDAs and I cannot talk about that yet.
Oh yeah, sure.
Cool stuff coming for sure. Yeah.
Nice. I'm looking forward hearing from hearing about that. And so you your job now at the startup, it sounds very exciting. But you said you did agency before. Can you tell us a little bit which type of agency jobs you did?
Well, I started in Amsterdam, where I worked at a lot of smaller agencies, just learning the ropes, right? And then I joined a company called AKQA. They are actually originally from London, but they were a global company. And so when I joined them, that was really, I started as like, I think I was senior front-end developer, and it was mainly campaign work. So AKQA is a really good agency. I would personally say one of the best for creative technology storytelling, film, but all technology. So it's all website based or app based. And so there I learned a whole bunch and worked myself up as just a developer. Then I became like a principal developer, all that kind of stuff. And from that company, then they asked me to move to Paris to start up part of the tech team. So they hired a technical director and me, and then we would start it. So that was really interesting. But that was all really more campaign related work. And a little bit of like bigger platforms, but not really. So it wasn't really consultancy. It was just running projects for companies like Nike or Chanel, things like that.
Wow, nice.
And then, it was pretty intense, but good fun. And then after that, I worked at Valtech, which is actually a French company, but now also global. They have like 40 offices or something. And that was much more a consultancy type job. I was also called a principal consultant or something fancy like that. And I was just a consultant that did front end stuff. And so it was more a company that also helps you with processes and governance. And if you have a website factory with 400 websites, how do you govern this? How do you help people? And so in this company, I was director of front-end development. And then first I did that in only France, but later on globally as well. So I was representing the front-end developers in like 40 offices, which was rather crazy, but good fun also.
Yes, I remember when you were at Futures Amsterdam last year in February, I was super impressed by all the clients you talked about. Oh man, like he works like right in with a lot of very interesting clients.
Well, it sounds cool, but it doesn't always mean it is. Like when you are in a project with this one of those clients, right? Yeah, I'm basically crying all the time, getting gray and bald, right? When we're at it, but only looking back, you're like, oh boy. we did like a Nike Plus website, or we did Chanel.com, or whatever else big project we did. And so looking back, you learn a lot and you're really happy. But during it's really trying.
Yeah.
It's very stressful. I imagine. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Very demanding clients. All right. And I imagine there is a whole bunch of differences between your agency job and your new job as a developer advocate in the startup, ranging from company culture, decision making, etc. Can you tell us a little bit about what the main differences are between the two worlds for you?
Well, let's see. If I look at me and me going and changing, right? So I didn't decide to move upward, but move sideways to a just slightly different path in the career. Let's first talk about this career change, because when you're like a technical director or you're a developer or something, you kind of have, you have in a project, there's a line you can work towards, and you know if you go over it, it goes wrong. And if you go really close to it, it's awesome, right? You kind of know what is good and what is not good. And so you figure out within your time span that you're working, how hard do I press? And you get, I, after 15 years at agencies and projects, I knew what to do to be successful. And I knew very early on to say, if we don't do this, it's going to go wrong. Okay. So, and then now that was all that worked in this corporate structure really well. And if you then play outside of the box, you can promote and do all the fun stuff. So it was very defined. Then now I moved to a startup where, first of all, we don't have all those rules, or not really. But second of all, it's also a developer advocate. And I don't have that line anymore, right? I don't know how far to push to be successful or not. I don't know if a, if an article I write will have conversion. It might have, but you cannot just say, okay, let's do three articles per month and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Only one of the three is good. What does that do, right? Only being broadcasting doesn't always work. So the big difference is I don't know what it is to be super successful in that new job. Plus, it's a startup and it's more open, which actually I love, because you're kind of free. You can figure out what to do while you do it. And this is what
you
I love.
Have to write.
You have to, and you have to succeed. You have to. You want to go to a Series A funding.
Yeah,
you have to actually start making money. So you have to, like, everybody is a salesperson, but not really, right?
Yeah.
I'm also not marketing, but maybe a bit. And so what I love about this startup is that they hired everybody that they thought were great, right? Super high talent. Like, I'm working with developers now that make me cry when I try to type something in front of them. That's how good they are. It's ridiculous. And so if you have a bunch of those smart people put together on the development team, but also on the sales team or on the support team, if you have put those people together, you can kind of ask of them, okay, which direction should we go? This is my general plan. Let's run. And it's working. And they're doing that super well. And I'm just one cog in that machine, but also being regarded as this guy that is that they saw doing stuff that was good. So let's get this guy. And I'm really privileged to be there. But it's also hard because I don't actually know specifically if I do this, it will work. I just hope to make really good content and hope that developers like what I have to say, and then we move on, basically.
Yeah, that's what startups do, right? They try something, and if it doesn't work, we try something else. If it works, we keep going down that path.
I must say, in this startup, I think they found a space where if you do the right thing, it is going to work. And based on that, the funding also came in, because we work with those bigger companies that are all in like the more enterprisey level, right? And on that level, there was just a gap, right? Jamstack, JavaScript first, all of that, there's a gap for that, because if you have a big Adobe AEM project, that doesn't really touch that modern front end. And every brand I used to work for at agencies, they all wanted personalization, and some managed to do it, but most don't, because it's hard to do. And so this startup knew, if I build this way and it's different from the original systems that couldn't really pull it off, let's run and try. And so there's a real market. It's just, we're not going to pivot on that. It's just going to happen, but we just have to find the clients to prove it. Right. So it's, This is not one of those agencies like, let's try this. Oh, that address book thing didn't work. Let's go that and let's tagging pictures on that. That doesn't work. There's much more of a master plan idea here that will actually get executed. It's just how.
Wow. Well, it sounds challenging and exciting.
Yes, that's exactly right. Because like I could work from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and still not know if it worked. And there's so much avenues of opportunity everywhere. And so you can just let yourself go and run with it. We'll see how long I do that or not. And if I give myself some boundaries, we'll have to see. That's the difference from agency to startup, right? At agency, you have a peak of a sprint that has to finish, and then you go down again. You have a release, you have a peak in work, and you go down again. Right now, if we wanted to, we could only peak.
Yeah.
Sorry, that would have been my dog.
Yeah, that's not a problem. Can you tell us, if you want, what ultimately triggered your decision to go from agency to startup? Was it a conscious decision? Was it planned? Was it spontaneous? How did it go for you?
That's a good question. And I think it was conscious. It wasn't specifically planned, but the story is this. Like in 2019, I decided, you know what? I want to do more community work. Because I had been head down working hard in agencies my whole career, learning a whole bunch, but not really sharing anything. And so I thought, why not I just share some stuff, which means conference talks, blog posts, things like that. As it turned out, I learned way more from the community than I could ever give back. So it's a really nice combination that flowed well. And then I decided later on, you know what? I'm going to make YouTube videos. I always wanted to do something like that, but I never got around to it. And then I bought this webcam and it kind of sucked, but it was the most expensive one out there. So I was like, oh boy, let's research. And why? And I wrote a blog post on it. And then I thought, why not make a video on it? This is my chance. Yeah. And so I made this video. I started the YouTube channel. And since then, I've made a video a week. And my whole career changed, right? So I took time. All my personal time went into it. And then over time, doing more and more of that community work, speaking on conferences more, it was also more part of my agency job to be representing front-end people through my YouTube, but also at conferences saying, hey, I work at Valtech and this is what we do. And now I'm speaking here and doing something cool. And so you get to represent front-end people, which is great. And I enjoyed it myself too, because it's much more creative than being in planning meetings and making sure everybody's happy in a complicated project, right? So it was a nice mix. And so basically what I did, I turned my own career around and I opened up all these avenues. And then because I did this work globally for this agency, right? But it wasn't officially my job. I had decided I'm just going to do it. So at one point I can get promoted, because if you don't know how to do it, why would you be promoted, right?
Yeah.
But it turned out in the end, it didn't really work out to get promoted. That was a big part on my end, but also on the company, and Corona happened. And then all around me, I started to get offers from people at product companies. Hey, do you want to consult for us? Can we do a quick call on how would you implement this and this? And then it opened up my brain. It's like, hey, I always want to try something with products. Why not just join this startup? And then or join a startup, right? So it was in my mind already. And then I saw a lot of really, really good developers in our community all going to Uniform. And so I needed to just think about that. Like, why is everybody going there? What's happening in this place? And then when I had a call with the CTO, Alex, he didn't specifically ask me to join, but he basically described the job I wanted to do. Because we were just talking. Great. It's like, oh, you're just describing me. You know that, right? And so not that much time passed and I decided to join.
Nice. Wow. And did you have to learn some new skills entering that new job? I imagine probably because it's a whole other world. What are some things you needed to learn?
I think there's a whole bunch I needed to learn. And the bigger things are like thinking bigger, right? We are going to influence a market. That's not something you think about when you're as an agency. I just have to finish this project. And so those kind of things. Or for example, an acronym like GTM. To me, a developer, this is Google Tag Manager. In a startup, this means go to market. Right? There's all these little things that I had no idea. And there's this like how you do releases for a product. If you do releases on a project that has to be finished in 3 months, it's very different from doing releases for a product with, you know, end-to-end testing. And those, like, it feels like it's more more serious because you have to support earlier versions and there's all this other stuff. And understanding those business terms a little bit, understanding a little bit how it works with investments and, you know, there's just new vocabulary that I just had no idea about. And I really noticed I'm super production focused and not always maybe bigger business thinking or like how do we tell a story so business people want to buy this. I call this LinkedIn people, right? But they're actually a really valid group of people putting the signatures on the contracts. And of course, always think agency developers, that's my focus. Of course, that's why I'm hired, right? I'm a developer advocate. But it's better to be have a wider net of how you think. And so, yes, I'm learning. It's cool.
Well, cool. So could you go through with us a typical day in your old job versus a typical day in your new job, like summarized, to see a little bit the comparison between the two?
Well, let's talk about before Corona hit. Because before Corona also means that was around the time that I started to do more community work, and that's much closer to what I do now. So before, at an actual agency job, it would be much more focused. If I was doing more like one project, it's all meetings about that project and actually coding some stuff and then having one-on-ones with people to see if they're still happy because I was their director, right?
Yeah.
And then, so it's much more structured. And what I also just said before, sometimes I would go home at 6 every day because I knew in 2-3 weeks I have to go home at midnight every day. So it was much more balanced. But at an agency, like not at agency, but at startup now, there's two types of days. One is that's pretty open. I either have some meetings or not, but I just do content creation with the plan I had in mind to make content about. And that's it. Right, I could stop at 5 or go grocery shopping anytime. It's completely free, completely open, as long as you communicate and have meetings if needed. So that's the norm. That's one day. But the other day is that you start at 9 in the morning, you end at midnight because there's all this stuff happening, and it's less structured, but there's so much more opportunity to learn. And it's like, if you're a really structured person, you might not be flexible enough for a startup. I'm kind of dealing with constantly changing everything. And this doesn't sound that good. It might, but don't let that reflect on the startup. I choose myself to be this flexible. I think if I told my boss, I'm going to stop work every day at 7 p.m. and this is what I'll do, they'll be like, sure, go for it. Which is awesome, right? Because it's that open and there's that much trust because they hired only the people that they think are the best for the company. So with high, how do you say this? Like high talent, and I'm not per se saying I'm the most talented or anything. I just have this work ethic that I think fits this kind of company. But also having candor, being super honest and hiring the right people, you can kind of let it go free and people will just make a release. It will. You don't have to ask someone, did you fix that bug? No, it's fixed because we all want to make that release happen.
You all care together about the project, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. All right. And so in this show, Decoding the Code, we always have these myths. And about startups, there are some interesting ones, which I'm not really sure if they all apply to your situation or if you are even in touch with that. But let's just give it a go, and maybe you can debunk some for us, and we see where it goes.
They might be true.
Yeah. Yes. So let's see. The first one, it's startups are grind, big companies are for work-life balance.
For me, my whole career was a grind.
Okay.
But I choose that. I just choose to do that because everything has to. Yeah, because and startups can be a grind because you're obviously trying to work towards something.
Yeah, of course.
If I always think if people know from themselves what they want, and if that is life balance, you choose to do that somewhere. But when you work in an agency, it for me at AKQA, for example, that I worked harder than ever in my life at that agency. So you choose yourself.
Yeah, of course. Nice.
Myth debunked.
Debunked. Oh, I should have like a stamp or something like they have in Mythbusters. Debunked.
Post-processing.
Oh, I could do that actually.
Yeah. Anyways,
if I learn some more about video editing. All right. So the second one would be you launch lean and then you can build things the old way.
Wow.
Which
do you know what the old way is?
Yeah, I think with the old way, I Googled this stuff, right? So I think what they mean with the old way is like the waterfall principle where it's all planned out and then it's all developed and it's all tested and then it's all done. And then you show it to the client and then, oh, this is not what I wanted. And then...
Well, I think we are still in the phase where every release is a major release, right? We are now at 7, I think. So last quarter... We had like release 5, then we had release 6. So we're still in the big releases.
Okay.
But what I know, where I work, the user stories of what we have to do are generally one page in Notion. So it's not hyper thought out because you don't always know what is the best until you work on it. So it's very agile.
Yeah.
But there is a user story. We work on the story. We have a bit of spec and we have the ideas of the creatives, ideas of the technology people. And we do have unit tests for everything. We have end-to-end tests for everything. We have canary releases. Nice. Like, it's serious business. It's true. It's a technical company, right? We are a software development company. And so I don't think it's like, let's release early and fail and see what happens. We are past that stage where the software is so solid that it really does release well. And if there's a bug, of course, we're fixing. That's normal. There's always iteration on it. But we release so often that it's almost seamless. You don't really feel like, hey, we did a quick thing and now let's go serious. No, I think it's in the middle.
All right. So you kind of found your, maybe not product market fit or you did, but more like you know where you're going and you know that it will work.
Yeah, I think so.
Nice.
I hope product team colleagues are not like, dude, what are you saying?
All right. The third one, and you don't have to give any specifics here. It says the pay is low. So basically in a startup, you won't earn enough money. How do you think that compares?
I think it completely depends on how you set up your startup, right?
Yeah.
You can like... If you work in a place where people don't make as much money and you can pay market conform, please do, because you have more money left to do other things.
Yeah.
But you can also be in the place where you say, okay, we're going to just get all that cash that we received and only get the best people, but not grow too much. So you pay them more, but you might get better results because you have better salespeople, you have better developers. And I feel like the pay that these guys offered me, I was like, really, for a startup? I'm in. And so it was completely market conformed to my career. So they did that really smartly. Because if they did offer less and say, yeah, we're a startup, I would be, nope, that's not going to fit.
Yeah.
And so it also depends. Do you want to go with junior people or you want to go with senior people? It really depends on the type of startup, I guess.
All right. So it's in a way debunked, but not... For sure.
Not
so not
really.
All.
I've had startup offers that were like, are you serious? That low? I could not pay my rent. Right. So those exist. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you get like equity and you're like, yeah, equity doesn't pay the rent.
Not in the beginning. Maybe not after 5 years or something. And then maybe still not. So yeah, you never know.
Yeah. All right. It depends, let's say.
Myth, it depends.
Yeah, probably. But we can try to find a reasoning about it. Yeah. The next one would be, there are only young people working at startups.
Am I young? I'm 36. Yeah, I don't think I'm young.
Yeah, at I least. Think 36 is still young. Okay. But either way, I found the myth a little bit weird, but I anyway wanted to bring it up because the company, startup or not, will hire the most qualified person. Sometimes that are old people, not old people, more experienced people. And sometimes it's like you need also young people with a fresh perspective. I think that's important for a startup to have young people. Yes. Also, for
you need out-of-the-box thinkers. You're completely right.
Yeah.
And
you need a mix of everything.
Clearly. And I think where I now work, I'm not the youngest, but I'm the average, I think. So where I work, it's more people on the senior end. Okay. Because we deal with clients who are also always on that senior end.
Okay.
Right. So it's really important that we have people that can carry the weight to talk to a huge client in the enterprise world. So that is probably a big part of those decisions. But I guess when we grow and we need people to think outside of the box for, let's say, marketing or like what technology and how.
Yeah,
it might be interesting to have some youngsters who are like doing some crazy stuff, right? But I don't think we're there at the moment. And you know what? We might never be, because we do have a team that is so good at knowing what is needed for these clients that we might not need that yet. We don't know.
Yeah. Always have to find out along the way.
Sadly, yes. Exactly.
All right. The next one would be, you always have to work long hours.
You don't have to, but you choose. And this is something, when I was like technical director at an agency, this is also what you teach people, right? Be responsible. Understand if you commit to something that you do it. And if you overcommit it, it's your problem. You just do it. If you commit, you do it. And so if you are more responsible, you can then also say, I will not commit to something because it's too much. And then nobody can argue with you because you said, this is the amount of time. This is what we have to do. There we go. And so at a startup, it can probably be the same. If we go towards a deadline and it has to be finished because of, you know, seed money or whatever big client, you chose to work at a startup. You chose that was the release we all work against. You go. And so it's kind of up to the developer or the person themselves. If you're responsible and you have overview, I think if you're respected enough in the place where you work, you can just say no, because I have this and this on my plate. I'll do something else, or I don't do as much. And then sometimes if they ask you, you might say yes. I think it's really part of the employee. And if it's basically a driving force from your executive people that we have to work, something's up. I don't think that fits. I think you have to want to do it. And then suddenly it's not so bad anymore.
Yes. Like when you, as you said, when you work at a startup, you're all going toward one goal and you really want to have it work. So you're like not even really working. You're like just wanting
I really enjoy what I do. And then suddenly it's not a burden.
And it's almost no work anymore.
No, and we are really quite free. If I need to get lunch for 2 hours because I have to see my mom, I'll just do it. And if my work is still finished, nobody worried about that, right? If we do good work, it's cool.
Nice. All right, next one. this is funny. Startup life is glamorous.
No, to be. I don't know. You know what was glamorous when I worked at AKQA? This is a couple of years ago, I think 7 or something. I was always backstage at these fashion shows of fancy brands. Because we would do like live streams and fancy campaigns for fashion shows. And I was always like with the elite drinking champagne in Paris backstage at the Hermes fashion show, things like that. That was much fancier than what we do now. And when I heard this from a friend of mine, he came into AKQA to get a job. And he said when he came into the office, he thought he was walking into like a fashion house because everybody looked so fancy. And it was the nicest furniture he had ever seen. He felt like almost uncomfortable of how fancy this place is. So I would say at certain agencies in the specific niche that I work, that's much more glamorous. And it's not that it's not where I work now. We can do amazing things for those big clients, but I don't know. What is glamorous to you?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What is glamorous? Yeah. I think it refers to the big Silicon Valley startups that are not really that startup anymore. Like
you mean Google, the ones that don't let you go home and stuff?
Yeah.
Right? The ones where you eat in the office, you go to the gym in the office, and you might sleep at your $5,000 apartment and then go back. I don't know how glamorous that is.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think, yeah, maybe it's like when you have a job where you travel a lot and you think it might be glamorous to travel all the time and maybe get business class all the time and then you stay in fancy hotel rooms. But even that is not, I think, glamorous because you jump from the plane to the hotel to the venue to the plane and back.
When I worked at Voltec before Corona, I traveled at least twice a month to different clients in different countries. I loved doing it because of the cool projects you do, but it's actually, you get pretty tired soon from it.
Yeah, but of course.
I'm not complaining here, right? These are rich people, first world problems. Let's be honest.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's exactly true. It's like, oh man, I have to get into the plane. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, another hotel.
Again, another five-star hotel. Oh man. All right. The last one, at a startup, you don't have job security. And I think this is also largely depends on which startup you're in. But
yeah, but also probably country. Like I am working at a startup that is global, but they're based in the US. And but I have a French contract, which means that something called a CDI, which is I have a contract that's unlimited. Because of the French government, that's what they give people that work somewhere, right? So if they want to fire me, that's going to take a lot of effort on their part because of the rights of the worker in the country. And so I got a French contract. So for me, that's completely not the case. And what I love about this place is we have people all over the world, right? There's no office. And they give people contracts based on the country that they're in. Nice. And so get the benefits of Denmark or you get the benefits of France for if you work there. It's the hard way to go about it, but it's the decent way. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, that's...
So for me, security it is.
Yeah. Yes, I think it depends on, like, as you said, the country. Because also in Luxembourg and also in Germany, I know that it's really hard to fire someone. It's... They're like the employee is protected way more than the company, which but in some cases benefits like or doesn't benefit the company because sometimes
it's not always easy, right? There's so many rules around it. Like there's a reason GitLab doesn't hire French people because they don't want an entity in France because it's just too hard to deal with the rules.
Yeah.
So there's a drawback to it as well. But we just found another startup that actually became an entity in France that hired me and then my job pays them. That's an amazing avenue of business, right? If people, if you have global companies where people come from all countries, just go at it that way. It's cool.
Yeah. Nice. All right. So that was everything I wanted to ask you, but maybe you have something you want to talk about, something that's coming up for you personally or on your job or some message you want to give the audience, whatever you want to tell them.
The stage is mine.
Go nuts. Well, you know what? Go nuts.
there's not that much. No, I'm really happy that I got to be interviewed for a change, right? Because I tend to be in your position on my YouTube channel, for example. And I really enjoy this because it's such a different approach to it. So what I think would be cool if people are now watching this video when it's finished, obviously, maybe have a look at my channel. And what I love about it is that we have a similar approach to our content, but it is actually different. There are different avenues towards it. So it's still, we're not competing. We're actually extending of how this all works. Nice. So potentially, if you wanted to, you can check out my YouTube channel. And if you like,
yeah, it, I will link subscribe. It in the right now. It should be there. So.
Somewhere popping up, exactly.
Somewhere no, popping would, up, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's it for now. There's no Uncle Tim message for the young developers this time, I think.
Okay, no problem. All right. So thank you very much, Tim, for your time and your answers, of course. It's been a pleasure having you here.
Thank you very much. I had a great time. Cheers, man. Bye.
Oh, yeah. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Decoding the Code. A new episode will be available every week. So don't forget to tune in next Monday. For past episodes, check out the website, decoding.show.